I'm okay with that. Hi. Hi.
I hold on. How about can you guys hear me now? Is this better? I made some changes. I'm always testing my audio. Is that a yes?
I can hear you fine.
I know you. I can hear you. We're good. Yep, now we're good. All right, we are now in.
Okay.
We are rocking and rolling. I am so happy, everybody. Thank you for your patience with our audio. I have gone, I'm trying to do some cool things. So yes, I am today hanging out with Elaine, the one and only redheaded libertarian. I'm so happy. And you don't know how special you actually are. It is very rare that I have libertarians on my show.
Oh,
Yes,
well.
it is
Cool. I'm
very
very
rare.
glad.
Yes, very rare. So you must be doing something right. So tell me, why in the world did you decide you wanted to sit here and talk to me about history? Why would you do something
Oh.
like that? I mean, people want to talk about all kind of stuff. This week I was talking about aliens. I'm serious. I talk about all, I talk about race, all kind of crazy stuff. It is rare that I have a conversation about history, and I'm hoping that the people will enjoy it. They may not. If they start, getting off, then we know we've lost. But we're going to hope they stay. So tell me about this. Why in the world would you want to be talking about history?
Because I think that, especially as libertarians, we are constantly referring back to the things that have not worked out well in history for other government systems, other countries, other, groups. It could even be as small as like a small tribe of some sort. And we can learn so much from history, but I don't know of very many libertarian podcasts that actually discuss just history. So I started one for myself a couple months ago, and then I was promptly banned by Facebook from going live or advertising. And so
You
this
were
is my
banned.
first.
Hold on. You were banned by Facebook? Is that true?
Yes. I could still post, but they wouldn't let me go live and they wouldn't let me run ads, which I was never running ads to begin
Wow.
with. So
Wow.
yeah. So this is my first live back. Yeah,
I
my
am so
ban was up a
happy.
couple of days ago.
Thomas says the redhead libertarian is in the house. She's feisty, Larry. You'll have your hands full. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, I like it. So tell me why you're feisty. I mean, here's why I tend to not be feisty, right? I tend to not be. Most people almost laugh or tease me when they say, Larry, you don't seem to get riled that much, right? Particularly when people give me crazy stuff that I think is kind of nutty. I often don't. But I don't because, as a general rule, I feel like if I'm feisty, I feel like I push people away. Do you feel like that's happening for you or no? Or maybe it's personality. Maybe that's what it is. What do you
I
think?
think it's more passion than anything else. It's more like I care about what I'm talking about, and I think that comes through. It's not necessarily feisty as in I'm contentious with people and like I
Ah,
try to
okay.
start things or I try to get them like backed into a corner or anything like that. That's not really my style. I'm not trying to make anybody like mad or pissed off at me.
Okay.
So that's, so I'm feisty, but I'm more
All right.
passionate about liberty and passionate about history and passionate about lots of causes and
I like
different things
that.
like that.
Charlie says, banned, question mark. Elaine's show is excellent. And Flakebook once again earns derision. Great choice for a guest, Larry. You got fans here. I should have picked you earlier. My God, you got fans here. All right, you like history and causes. Give me a time in history and let's show why, I don't know, I'm right, you're wrong. I don't know how I'm going to be right, but I'll just make that up. I'll get you feisty. Come on. What's a time in history?
So a time in history that I recently researched that I was actually surprised by was the Middle Ages, or what we've commonly called for years, the Dark Ages.
Yep.
And I discovered that they were not all that dark.
Not at all. Absolutely not true. Particularly in the Middle East.
Yes, very much so.
Particularly in the Middle East. And absolutely. Spain. Particularly in the Middle East. Yes. Well, remember, you got to remember, during the, that's when the Muslims came.
Yes.
This was a Muslim Renaissance.
Yes, it was. And the rest of Europe was just kind of like dealing with the Black Plague and like all of these other things. And Germany was sort of not doing a whole lot, but the Muslim
Don't mess with my Germans. Don't mess with my Germans.
I am German.
Me too. So my mom was born in Bad Homburg.
Yes. So in Absolutely. A way, the Muslim Renaissance kicked off the Italian-centered Renaissance that sort of took over the rest of Europe.
Absolutely.
And Absolutely. I feel like a lot of people don't realize that.
Well, this goes to what a lot of people think, right? Which mm-hmm. the idea that all of history is based out of basically Western Central Europe.
Right.
And for most of Americans, that's been true, because most of Americans have come from Central and Western Europe. That was the thing for many, many years. That isn't mm-hmm. as true now, obviously. So I think now people are thinking differently about that. They really are thinking a lot differently about, you know, history is different all over the place. It's not just what was right. happening in the Dark Ages. So I think you're completely right. But why should we care, right? In other words, let's say that's true, and it is true, that there was a mm-hmm. Muslim Renaissance in the Muslim world. I shouldn't say Muslim, but it's the Muslim world. The Muslim mm-hmm. world Renaissance, right, at that time. And Europe is struggling in general at that time, except those that are kind of dominated by or trading with the Muslim world, which is Italians and Spanish. Mm-hmm. Why do we care? Why does it matter to the average person? Why does Rocco care? Rocco's watching, talking about good evening. Barry is your friend. He's watching too. Yeah, a lot of people are watching. They're all watching. And they're like, so why do they care? Why does David care?
We should care because ultimately that is where we all come from. That is where our ideas of government have come from in some way or another. That is where our ideas, specifically that period of time in that area of the world, in Spain and Andalus particularly, that's where our modern notions of things that are as simple as the three-course dinner meal, that's where that comes from. That's where our notions of fashion that changes with the seasons come from. That's where our notions of hygiene come from. Like, all of that centered there. And I think we do ourselves a disservice if we are constantly going through the world thinking that somehow all of these things only revolved around what would have been considered, you know, white Europeans.
But aren't we then in that case, and this is not necessarily being racist in that case, as someone might say, because you used the phrase mm-hmm. white Europeans, but aren't we in a way being classist? I mean, the people who were having three-course meals, they probably weren't the peasantry, right? They probably were more of the elites, and we've taken that culture kind of from the elites, and maybe even those elites who were trading with the Middle East, who were trading with China or whomever, right? Are we being classist there?
I think it's more due to ignorance, and not ignorance that's meant to be like a mean type of ignorance.
Okay.
It's just an ignorance of omission. Like, those things are just not taught in history class. So if you don't go on to become a history buff and really care right. about it later in life, or researcher for yourself in some way, or take a college class that is more of a deep dive into history, you're just not going to know. And it's not because you deliberately don't want to know. It's just that information is not being shared with you. And I think that in order to have the most objective view of history, you have to do those things. You have
but
to consider.
I would argue the opposite. I would mm-hmm. argue the opposite, to be forward with you, Lane, because you could, and you've done it. You could mm-hmm. deep dive in anything you want to deep dive in now, with the internet and mm-hmm. books on, you know, audio books, and, you know, you go on, and you can get, you know, the History Channel stuff, the Curiosity mm-hmm. Stream, if you want to do a download of streams. You could deep dive on virtually anything. If you were like, I really want to know about the Italian Renaissance, you could literally watch 10 hours of that on videos, or you could read books, or you could listen to audiobooks. I feel almost the opposite. I feel almost like there's too much, and that's kind of turned us off, because at least when you're in school, not that I'm a fan of school, I'm not a fan of school, but at least when you're in school, there's mm-hmm. a teacher who curates everything for you and says, just read chapters 1 through 4 and ask these questions, or blah, blah, blah. And then we go, okay, great. I just have to know these things. I can curate it. Now I let, you know, someone go on the internet, and it's like I can walk down 17 rabbit holes. Which mm-hmm. one do I know is true or not true? How deep should I go? It becomes, I think, harder. Am I wrong?
It does become harder, but there are curators out there that care about the validity of their information, the historical accuracy of their information, and all of those things too. So I would almost argue that you could find a better teacher on YouTube than you could find in a high school classroom.
I wish you were wrong. I wish I have a daughter in high school right now. Mm-hmm. I wish you were wrong.
No.
The amount of times that I found myself teaching my daughter when she's in school. Mm-hmm. I mean, every other week I'm literally sitting with her and talking her through how things work, what's happened. I've been her history teacher so many times, it's not even funny. So,
right.
Yeah.
And we know, especially in public school, that only one version of history is taught. Like there
right.
are so many things just in our own history, not even European, not even world history, none of that, that we just don't know. Like the Tulsa Race Massacre. Mm-hmm. I had yep. never heard of that until about 2 years ago.
Yep. I know. I did a show on that last year, Juneteenth, and it like mm-hmm. blew everybody's mind. They were like, what? I'm like,
they were like, yeah. When did this happen? And people who are even from Oklahoma did not even know that that existed and that
absolutely.
That was a thing. And that it's within the last 100 years.
Yep.
We don't have to go back 600 years to be like, oh, we found lost history. We have lost history in our grandparents' generation. And yes. I'm only 33.
Yep. Charlie says, regarding better teachers on YouTube than in the classroom, as a former teacher, I agree with this without reservation. Wow.
Yeah.
Rocco says, absolutely right. YouTube has taught me more about life than anything.
It's true. And also,
absolutely.
to your point about there being almost too much information.
Yep.
You can do deep dives on anything that you want on YouTube, and yet people don't. The most popular videos on YouTube are like cat videos. So people aren't doing deep dives most of the time. They're looking for entertainment.
Yes.
So
yes.
To me, it's like, if you can make that history entertaining, or at the very least interesting to
yes.
people, versus a teacher that is droning at the head of a classroom and you're just like falling asleep.
Yeah, this is the thing I think you find with guys like Carl Sagan back in the 70s, to a lesser degree, but similar, Neil deGrasse Tyson in today's world. Mm-hmm. While neither of them was the best scientist, Neil deGrasse Tyson right. is not the best scientist. But those two guys made people interested in
psychology behind why that is, but the cycles always happen. They are inevitable.
Like, well, I'll walk down one more road with that. When mm-hmm. Rome fell, most Roman citizens didn't know Rome fell.
Exactly.
And
because
didn't believe it did.
Step by step removed themselves
yep.
from that center so thoroughly
yep.
that it didn't matter that Rome had fallen. And in a way, I kind of think America is on that road too.
You had to walk down that road, didn't you?
Well, of course.
You had to walk down that road. But no, I mean, Romania, the country Romania, is literally named for the end of the Roman Empire, right? The land mm-hmm. of the Romans. Romania is, right. they thought they were still Roman Empire, and they were barbarians. And they thought right. they were the Roman Empire even after the Roman Empire fell. But mm-hmm. I'm gonna answer David's question. The psychology is only one thing. Fear.
Yes.
Without fear, you cannot control.
Yes.
Government cannot control
without
fear.
I say that all the time.
Yes.
I say that all the time when I talk about electoral politics.
Yes.
That if if Democrats and Republicans can't make you scared of something, they know that you're not going to pull the lever for something or against something.
Yep.
And so that is what they run their campaigns on 99% of the time.
I used to tell a joke and I would say, imagine for a second that it's thousands of years ago and there's crazy chaos everywhere and raiders are attacking villages and villagers are trying to fight themselves and everyone's trying to grab resources. We don't know what's going on. And here comes some guy and he goes, hey, guys, I got a plan. Here's my plan. All the time these people rob you, don't you? Oh, don't they? And they go, yeah, you don't ever know when they're going to come. They kill people. It's terrible, isn't it? Yeah. How about if only I rob you? Just me. And I only come by only once a year. And when I come by to rob you, I promise I won't take everything. You will always have enough to live because I want to come back and rob you next year. So I will not take everything ever. Mm-hmm. One time only. And in fact, if someone else tries to rob you, I'll go kill them. And they went, huh, compared to what's happening now, that's not a bad deal.
A deal.
Yeah. So, but what about like raping and killing? No, there'll still be some of that, but not as much, right? There'll be some. It'll be less because I still want you to live. So there'll be some raping and killing, but not much, you know, a little bit. And when I come by, I'll let you know when I'm coming by and, you know, to rob you on the third. I'll be here to rob you then. And you go, great. Not a bad deal. What's your name? And he said, my name is Monarchy. Oh, that's not, I like that. And then eventually somebody said to these people, I said, wait a minute, I got
and
a better
not
idea.
But I've been appointed by God to rob you. So how could you argue with me?
How could you argue against God? Absolutely.
And I
Come
know
on.
That you can't even read the Bible. So you have to rely on me to
well,
tell
this
you
is even before says. Bible.
Right. Exactly.
This is even before Bible. This is back when you said the Son God did it. I mean, this is before even the Bible, right? So that's it. But then somebody came around and said, I got another idea. You're going to love this idea. You hate the fact that this guy comes by and he robs you every year, right? Yeah, I can't stand it, right? Okay. And he does some raping and killing. He does. He does raping and killing. He does. Okay. How about this? How about I give you a little bit of a say on how much I take from you? What? Yeah, I'm still going to rob you, but I'm going to give you a little bit of say on how much I rob you. Really? Mm-hmm. And that raping and killing stuff? A whole lot less, a lot more imprisoning, but not nowhere near as much as raping and killing. A whole lot less of that, a lot more imprisoning, but not the raping and killing part. And on top of that, if the votes go right, you might get to be the robber. And they go, whoa, what's your name? My name's Democracy. Right. Oh, that's not bad. I like this. This sounds really good. I like this. It's way better than that monarchy thing. Let's do this. Great. And then finally, somebody comes by and says, I have this idea. How about nobody robs you? That's libertarian.
Yeah, exactly.
And I hope we're going there. But I feel like we're heading back to monarchy. I feel like we're heading back to monarchy. But I'd like us to go
the opposite
way.
But yes.
So yes, to answer David's question, I think fear is the psychology behind it, right? It's fear. And then when you have something that's not so good, you take the best you can take. The sad part, I think, is most people, and I mean this as individuals, but also as groups, most people don't run towards something. They run away from something.
We are prey animals at our core. We have always been prey animals.
Why do you say that?
We lack everything necessary aside from tools and the ability to make and use tools, we lack all of the protections that any animal in the wild has for defense. We are offensive only. We don't have claws. We don't have fur to keep us warm. We need to build houses. We need tools to defend ourselves. We can't really do it with our hands, especially if you consider it's a wild animal that is our adversary who has sharp claws, sharp teeth. You know, we don't have any of that. So
I can't see humans being prey. Mm-hmm. I mean, for at least 200,000 years.
Right.
So,
but that's how we're ultimately designed.
We're designed as prey, but we can eat meat and we can eat vegetables. Mm-hmm. And we have canines.
But only if we figure out how to grow them.
And we have canines, and both our eyes are in front of us for binocular vision.
But predators sneak up from behind you. You can't see behind you.
Yes, but like horses and zebras have their eyes like that way. Ours are right there, like we're focusing. I don't know. I'm not sure I'm going to buy this one, feisty one. I'm not sure I'm buying this one. What? I mean, the right now we have been top of the food chain for millennia.
Yes, because we have cognitive development that animals don't have.
We're also eusocial. Meaning that we being social as a human is our strength, right? Being social, like ants. Ants are also eusocial, right? Yes. Like ants. Being social is their strength. Individual ant has virtually no power, right? But as a group,
an individual human doesn't have any power either.
Exactly right. And that's what I mean. We are similar to ants in that regard. What makes us powerful is the fact that we are social.
Yes.
Right. That's what makes us powerful. We're the apex predator, not because I'm physically the strongest guy in the world, but because in theory, a guy like me could press a button to drop a nuke. Right. That is why
we're smarter.
We're the apex.
We can't work harder than a wild animal, but we can work smarter than a wild animal.
I don't care how smart you are. Me against a tiger, I'm getting my ass kicked. I can be really smart.
What I'm saying from the perspective of evolution, we figured out they don't like fire. So we keep those lit all night. Or, you know, and we don't see very good in the dark. So we keep our lights on or our fires lit. And they rely on the dark to hide. So less likely to catch one of us unawares. We do have, you know, numbers, and some predators are more solitary.
Liberty Shamrocker says we have opposable thumbs, reasoning skills. Uh-huh. God gave us reign over every creature that creepeth the earth. As a redhead, she says, I also have fangs and claws. So
yeah, there's that Mark Twain quote. Everyone else is descended from apes, but redheads are descended from cats.
Yeah. So I'm not sure I'm buying this one. I mean, I feel like we have been top of the food chain for a long time. The greatest predator on the planet is for humans, is without question, the human sociopath. The human sociopath is the greatest predator there's ever been, responsible for tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of deaths. And destruction and mayhem and destroyed families and everything else. That's our greatest predator. There's no other predator.
And then you organize it and put it into a structure and you have government. And
yes,
then it becomes really efficient.
Yes, you do. Absolutely. Yes. I don't know. Benjamin says, strongly disagree that we are solely prey animals. You're losing the audience here, feisty one. You're losing the audience. I'm just telling you, you're losing them. So I don't know. You're losing them. So... But your point being, if I get it, you're saying the reason why we're strong is not because we're physically strong, which makes us prey. Brian agrees with you. He says humans are panicky herd animals.
Yes, basically.
Ouch. I don't know. That's a good one. All right. So let me grab one more if I can. People are asking questions. Are you okay taking these or no?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Let me see if I can grab another one here.
I may not have all the answers. I'm okay saying I don't know.
I think you have the answers. It's fine. I don't. They just want to hear us yap. They don't care. And then they're gonna tell us we're wrong. So I mean, they already did it. They're just gonna tell us we're wrong. So it doesn't really matter. So yes. Let's see if I can keep doing this. Rocco says that information has never been shared the way it needs to be in schools, and it teaches what they want you to know. And then he says this is why most people are employees and not more business owners. And I gotta say. In the system that we have now, right? The school system that we have now, heavily based upon the Prussian model, the German model, is really made for an industrial base, right? Yes. You take all your people, you put them into a room, they all do what they're told for 8 hours, they go home. So prepping them perfectly for a factory, right? Now you're ready for a factory, we're good. But in today's world where the factories aren't nowhere near as valuable as it used to be. I need your brains far more than I need your arms and legs now. I think the model doesn't work. I think the model is much more, we need a more post-industrial model. Am I wrong?
Yes. No, you're not wrong. Not at all. I mean, it was meant, if you know anything about Germans as a culture.
I do.
efficiency is number one for Germans, like 99.9% of the time. They don't care about creativity. They want efficiency.
Yep.
So if you are efficient, you are extremely valuable. And that is what that model is built for, is what is the most efficient way to get this thing from point A to point B and get it completed and do it accurately every single time and do it the same every single time.
Right.
And that's how we got assembly lines. That's how we got our schooling model, which was our schooling model was built to teach people how to be good assembly line workers.
Yes,
you do the same task over and over and over, and you do it the exact same way every single time so that the product at the end is consistent.
Yep, absolutely.
So you can sell more. You don't have inconsistent quality.
And so I can't get people now to understand that our education system is broken. They just keep saying, well, you just need better teachers, or you just need to put more money into it. And I'm like, no, the system is busted. It doesn't work. It's as if we're teaching our Marines how to shoot with a bow and arrow. Right?
Well, I would say the same thing that I say about the criminal justice system. It's not broken. It was designed that way. So
okay.
It's a design flaw.
So the problem is then am I saying get rid of government school?
For the result that it was designed for, it works perfectly. The problem is we don't need that anymore.
So
we need a new model.
My worry is, I think you're right. My worry is if I say it like that, people are going to hear, Larry wants to get rid of government schools. And the libertarians jump out of their seats and clap. And everyone else runs out of the room thinking I'm crazy. I mean, I think that's my worry, right? Am I wrong?
No, you're not. But there is a way to change that model without saying abolish the Department of Education and get rid of all government schools. No, we just need more creativity in that structure. Like, there are people that make millions of dollars producing and creating YouTube videos. Think of the number of skills you have to create a successful channel. Number one,
trying to figure it out myself.
Right. Number one, you have to know marketing, which is a whole skill set all by itself. You have to know how to be a good performer or be entertaining. That's a whole new skill set. You have to know how to edit videos. You have to know how to film videos, or at least know how to find someone who does.
Yep.
And those are all separate skills. So I saw recently on Twitter, someone was just like, the number one desired job of kids these days is to be a streamer. Like, this is the downfall of society. And I'm like, no, it's not. They're learning different things. They're learning how to be a marketer, how to be a videographer, how to be an editor, how to write a script, copywriting, how to do research. And they're learning it all on their own because it's something that they want to do versus something that a teacher is telling them they have to do.
Or they're learning how to eat Tide Pods.
Yeah, there's that too.
There's that too. I'm just saying it's both of them. But I happen to agree with you. I think you're completely right. Cliff says that the biggest problem with our lack of cognitive dissonance, our schools teach to pass tests, very limited knowledge and debate. I have two kids in school, right? My oldest is in high school and my youngest is still in elementary school. And I think it's true. More than often, Cliff, I'm spending my time getting my kids to question the rules, right? That's a critical piece. My daughter will go, well, I have to do X, Y, and Z. I said, you don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? You don't have to do anything, right? The only thing you have to do in life is die. Everything else is optional. So never think you have to do anything. The question is, what should you do? How do you get what makes the most sense? How do you get this done? How do you get the grade you want? That's what you should be thinking about, not what I have to do. Your mindset has to be, how do I get over that hill? Not, I have to carry this horse up this hill. No, how do I get over the hill? Does that mean I'm a horse, a car, I'm walking, I'm whatever? And I think that's a thing that they don't teach. They teach the opposite. They teach, shut up and follow the rules. Mm-hmm. Whether you are successful or not is irrelevant. Did you follow the rules? And I think we see this in government. An example I'll give is some company does something horrible and kills people, right? Mm-hmm. The first thing they'll say is, well, we deny any wrongdoing. Okay, but the people are dead. Yes, the people are dead. But we deny wrongdoing. Well, how can you do that? Well, because we didn't break any government rule or regulation. Yes. Wrongdoing is not decided by the individual who I've harmed. That's irrelevant. What wrongdoing is decided by is based upon, did I follow the regulations? Because mm-hmm. the crime in this case, when it's a corporation, isn't against the people. It's against the state. And as long as the state says, no, no, you followed state rules, no wrongdoing. And that comes from what I think Cliff is talking about, the idea of it doesn't matter what the outcome is. It doesn't matter if you get what you want. It matters, did you follow the rules and pass the test that the authority figure told you to pass? Oh, you passed that test? You're good. But 18 people died. Yeah, but I passed test.
Right. Yeah, he's not wrong.
Yes, absolutely. Barry has one specifically for you.
Okay.
Barry says, here's a history topic, Elaine. Compare King John and the current president and their oppositions on the Magna Carta and the Constitution.
Ooh.
See, you thought you were going to come here. It's going to be a cakewalk when you came back. No, I'm making you work for this. You got to work for this.
So, like, that's a whole topic on its own. Like, that's a whole podcast episode on its own.
Well, now you know what your next podcast is on. At least Barry will watch.
Right. Wow. I don't even know where to start with that. It's the Magna Carta is such an important historical document to start with.
Absolutely.
Because it was sort of the start of that shift, like you were talking about earlier, from, you know, hey, if the vote goes the right way, then you get to decide who might be the guy that comes and robs you. So it might be your neighbor instead of me. Like, so it was, I hate to say it was a step in the right direction, but it kind of was, because it did actually give people a voice where they didn't have one before.
I feel like it's obviously a right direction, right? Because I think, and the reason why I said it's not because the Magna Carta was awesome, but I think it was the first time that it was official that you could limit an authoritarian's power.
Yes. And
right. I think that's the reason.
So it also kind of took away that whole divine right. Like, it is my divine right to rule you. And the Magna Carta changed that.
Yep.
And in that way, it is completely different than the Constitution, because the Constitution says, you know, you have this, whether I exist or not, whether this piece of paper is signed, whether it exists, whether the president agrees to abide by it or whatever, you still have this right. That right is God-given before government or creator-given, or whichever religion you belong to. It's creator-given, whether or not the government exists, you still have all of these rights. We're just going to limit the government in the ways that they can infringe on that. And in that way, it took me a little while to get there, but in that way, I would argue that the Constitution failed, because it has not acted as an adequate restraint on government.
Well, neither did Magna Carta.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I think both failed. If you go down that road, I think both failed. However, I would argue that neither failed. And the reason why I would say that is, while the Magna Carta's job was to limit that king, King John, it really didn't. And there were many kings who just went past it. But I think that was the crack in the facade that was required to create. There's no constitution without Magna Carta, right?
No, I think you're right.
It succeed in that regard. And our constitution, at least, while it's still, you know, as you see now, people just step all over it constantly. In fact, most Americans don't value the Constitution.
No.
So, but I do
think they only value it when it matches their own value set.
Correct.
If it doesn't match their own values, then, well, we can make an amendment. We could just change it. It's fine.
You know, like, your rights are cool, like, except when I'm angry.
Right. Exactly. I don't think other people should be allowed to drink. Okay. Let's have prohibition. Oh shit. That didn't work.
Yep. What? Prohibition didn't work? Did you guys hear that? Prohibition doesn't work. Holy cow. It's amazing.
But the major difference between the Magna Carta and the Constitution is that the Magna Carta was, number one, it was reluctantly entered into. No king would ever concede power that way.
Right.
He was forced into it. So, and the Constitution was agreed upon. It was a two-way agreement between the people and government. And the Magna Carta was very much like, I don't want to get guillotined. Let's just, what do we have to do? Like, what do I have to do to keep my head?
I'm not sure I buy that one either, though. I'm gonna push back on that one too, feisty one, and be feisty with me if you want. I think King John did it not because he was afraid of the people. I think the reverse. I think he was afraid of his own nobles. He was a weak king who came from a strong king who had died in the Crusades, if I'm not mistaken, right? Didn't the king, the prior king, die in the Crusades? I think that's true. So King John is a weak king, and he's afraid of his own nobles, and that they'll take him out and they'll end his family line. So he wants an Magna Carta so that the average peasant won't join the local nobles in revolt.
Right.
So I think exactly. He was.
It's still the same principle. What do I have to do to keep my head?
When you said guillotine, I went immediately to the mob. I'm sorry. That was my thought. Okay.
That was my mistake. That's my head.
That's my head. Yeah, I see. So yes.
I mean, ultimately it was, well, crap. I'm in a position where I can't win.
Yep.
And so what can I give them? What is the minimum that they will accept to allow me to still live?
The minimum.
And the Magna Carta was it.
I like that. The minimal amount. All right, fine. The minimal. I'll do that. And I think something else though, right? The Constitution was also written by the equivalent of American nobility, right? I mean, they weren't officially nobility, but they were America's nobility, if there could have been such a thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that was also, I mean, you can see the way they wrote it. All men are created equal, yet they didn't mean women. They didn't even mean non-landowners, right? Mm-hmm. They actually meant land-owning white men who mm-hmm. came from Europe is what they actually meant when they wrote it. I still think it's a great document, and I think that we should look at it as all humans are created equal, which I think is awesome. But I think in both cases, you find the elites of the era creating these documents. And I guess in many ways, not American necessarily in this case, but I think in the other ways, the elites were the only ones who could have. Right? And the Magna Carta, 1200s, right? 1215, is that right? Magna Carta, something like that. 12-something. Yeah. Whatever time it was. It was the Third Crusade, so it must be 1200 something. Whatever the Magna Carta was, I'm sure my chat will tell me in like 5 seconds. But it was 12 something. I think 1215. I mean, you're talking most of the English population can't even read. Mm-hmm. But now you go 1776, a whole lot of Americans could read.
Yeah. And so, they were very involved in government because everything was super localized. They cared about who sat on the equivalent of what the judicial committee would be and the state legislature. And they that was their local doctor or the guy that they got their newspapers from or whatever, like the person that helped them open their business, the person they bought their business from. Like it was that's who were sat on these councils and different 100%. Things. And so it was much more of a, it was more egalitarian to start with. It wasn't, peasant Agreed. Versus noble, and the nobles made the deal with the king. It was very much local citizens, and then they were like, "Well, you know, you're the guy, you know, that sits on the state legislature, so you obviously know what you're doing, and so why don't you help out? Why don't you 100%. Go to the Continental Congress?" But if you study that a little bit deeper, mm-hmm. you can actually find that. In a lot of the colonies, the locals were just kind of like, I don't know about this revolution thing. Like, you guys are all gung-ho about this, but like, it means my house might get burned down. Like, I'm not sure if I'm cool with that. Like, I mean, they really didn't drag the populace into it kicking and screaming, but the populace wasn't all gung-ho for it the way that we're convinced in history class that they were.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Well, John posted, he agrees with me. I was right. Richard I died fighting in France. He had no legitimate heir, so the throne passed to John, who I believe was his younger brother, if not mistaken.
Yes.
And that might have been Richard the Lionheart. Was that Richard the Lionheart who died then? I'm not sure if it was Richard the Lionheart. Or was he Richard III? I forget which one it was. But anyway.
There's so many numbers, and they all have the same names.
And they're the same name. What's wrong with you British people? Change your name. So, yes. But, yeah, I knew they would tell me. So, yes. Brian says the Constitution hasn't failed. He says the states have failed to exert their 10th Amendment powers to check the federal government. That's an interesting take, but if this, I mean, I think the states tried in 1860, didn't work out well for them. Exactly. So I'm not sure that's a fair assessment, Brian. I don't know. Elaine, where do you go on that?
I think that's true. And I think it even predates that. It goes back to the Whiskey Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
So we set that precedent very early on that, oh, well, the federal government says we can't do it, so fine. And
there we go.
We tried to push back, and the federal government definitely came to our doorsteps and said, no, this is how it's going to be, period.
Mm, there we go. Barry says
that's really where the big shift from a confederation of states versus the United States mm-hmm. happened.
Barry says both, I think he means the Magna Carta and the Constitution, also gave a basis for people to revolt if they felt the ruling class or government was sidestepping their voice. But both required the people, Barons for the Magna Carta and the people of the Constitution, and today the people are too obsessed with things that give the illusion that they're part of something larger, the internet. Wow, Barry's saying some stuff here. He's saying internet. He's saying where the problem is, what he's saying, Elaine. He's saying you and me are the problem, that people should be out revolting, but instead they're watching us, and it's all our fault. Basically, you personally are responsible for the downfall of the United States, Elaine. Sorry, Barry has spoken.
Okay.
There we go, Barry. Sorry, she's good with it. I'm good too.
Me, because I go collapsitarian real quick.
You say that, but you know what? So many people I know are moving towards collapsitarian.
Mm-hmm.
So many I know are moving towards that. And I feel almost like I'm not mad at them for it. I get it. I look around. I have eyes. I see what's happening. But right. Man, it's disappointing for me. Like, I don't it want it to be true.
I don't either. And it's so hard. I often say that I am electorally pragmatic, but I am actually an anarchist, because while I hope for the best so, so much every election cycle, midterm, I hope for the best every mm-hmm. single time. And I work for it. You know, I worked for Joe last year. I did the best that I could for her. I have worked for Gary Johnson in the past when he ran for US Senate. I hope for the best every single time. And I'm disappointed because it doesn't happen, because other people don't see that vision. And so it's really hard, because it's like, it's not so much of a selfish thing, like, well, if I can't have what I want, then just burn it down. Mm. It's more of, if this is the best path forward, then maybe we should consider something different than what the United States looks like now. Going back to that vision of Rome, how the Roman states, you know, just over time withdrew themselves from Rome to the point where when Rome fell, they were okay. It didn't cause.
Yes, right, right. They had already become globally autonomous enough to not require the emperor anymore.
Exactly.
Sure.
So to me, that's almost our best case scenario now, is that we just need to keep continuing to be more independent at the state level and do what we can there, so that when inevitably DC just collapses into itself like a black hole and it just all gets sucked in.
Yeah, but I live in New York and my state's worse than all the rest. So I'd rather have Biden. Oh my God. I mean, I got Cuomo, like the worst governor. I mean, maybe California's got a little bit on me, but no, I got my governor not only is a hypocritical harasser and sexual assaulter, he also puts old people in nursing homes and kills them and decides whether or not you can get up in the morning and go to work or not. I got the worst. I don't know.
He's the worst, but hold on. He's only the worst that we know of.
Ah, valid point. Valid point. Yes, valid point. Absolutely.
Because there are so many that get away with things. It's like, how do you know that that is the worst?
Yeah, okay, you're right.
How low can you go before you get caught? Unfortunately.
Oh my God. Barry says the Magna Carta was 1215. I was right. There we go.
I thought that sound, I was like, I sometimes transpose dates and I was like, it's either 1215 or 1225. And I can't.
It's
remember.
Funny. If I have a thing called synesthesia, mm-hmm. I don't talk about it much. Okay. But my daughter also has it. It's hereditary. My daughter has it too. And that is when you you link either colors to sound, or you link sound to taste. You somehow connect different things.
Okay.
Things. My daughter does with numbers. Like for her, numbers are colors.
So oh, wow.
She can look at colors and know numbers. Numbers have colors. For me, dates are colors and dates are stairs. It's why I have a good grasp of history. I physically see history in my head, and I see stairs and dates and different colors. So mm-hmm. I can see it. If you remember, if you ever watched the is it the second or the third Matrix movie, when mm-hmm. the people are like using their hands on like a screen and moving, that's how mm-hmm. my head sees dates and times often. So yeah, so that's why I can remember stuff like that. It's not because I'm that smart. I have that thing in my head and I can see
stuff. So off topic question, you are the kind of person that thinks in images rather than thinks in concepts.
No, that's how your mind works. My mind doesn't work that way. I don't.
Okay.
This is just a specific thing called synesthesia. That's layered on top of anybody's brain.
Gotcha.
If that makes any sense. So it's not how I think, it's how I see things.
Okay.
That's what people always like, how do you know that date? How do you remember that date? Some other day, someone was like, you're telling me about Japanese history when the Japanese turned Edo into Tokyo. And I said 1868. Uh-huh. And he was like, how do you know that? I'm like, I don't know how I know that. I can see it. I don't know how I know. So that's how I remember silly dates like that. I don't know why, but it's an interesting thing as a conversationalist. Actual value, not much. It just makes me an interesting conversationalist. That's all. So yes. All good.
Time I actually see you in person, I might just be like, Larry, what happened in 1963? What color is 1963? Or like, I'll just pick a year.
I love it. No, it's great. I mean, that's Kennedy, right?
Yeah.
It's Kennedy.
I mean, among other things, like I'm sure there's other things that happened that year too.
Yes, but that's like, I see the steps. I can also see steps, by the way, in seasons.
Okay.
So seasons, I also see steps. It's kind of weird, I know, but just, yeah, it's a thing. If anyone cares, check out synesthesia. Lots of people have it. You may have it, not know. Just happens that way. When my wife doesn't have it. So when my youngest daughter was talking about colors and numbers, I went, oh, baby, what color is this? She was like 5 or 6. And what color is that? Oh, and my wife was like, what's going on? I said, she got synesthesia. She got it from me. My oldest daughter doesn't have it. My youngest does.
Interesting.
Just weird.
That's really neat.
But I don't have the number thing. I just understand it because of the way I see it. So I understood what she was talking about immediately because I have it. But my wife had no idea. My oldest was like, what is she talking about? I'm like, yeah. And you might have it. And it's not always, by the way I say we see it. Some people can like smell a sound or hear a smell or something like that, some combination of something. Right. And if you have it, it's a way you process things. That's all.
Interesting.
I know. It's
I'm going to be trying to like smell songs now.
You can smell songs. Yes, absolutely. You can
like,
smell songs.
Happen?
There we go. I love it. Well, but if you ever notice, there are some people that when you smell something, you then immediately think or hear of something that's not smell related. It does happen. Or you hear something and you smell something. That can happen too. Yes, absolutely. So anyway, we've yapped away on that one. I do want to bring up something which is a little bit off topic, but that is, we're talking about you. You got canceled, right?
Canceled.
You got like banned, right? Like someone.
Oh yeah, from Facebook. They just got mad at me.
They're gonna get mad at you. I would like people who are watching to do me a favor. If you're on my screen and you're seeing what I'm showing you, the censorship and free speech survey from the advocates. Please click that link in the description, go on over there. And if you're not, go to the advocates, take that survey. It's a censorship and free speech survey. Please take it. Why am I bugging you? Because they're my sponsor and it's free. So go take that survey. It's about 5 minutes or so. Tell me what you think about free speech, what you think about censorship. And then once you're done, share it and let people know you've taken it and share it. It makes my sponsors happy. It doesn't cost you a thing. So please go do that. And for everybody out there, free also, like, comment, and share. Let's get those algorithms going, guys. Then how are you gonna? You gotta bring the libertarian, the redhead libertarian back. You gotta bring her back. You gotta bring her back with a bang.
Yeah,
she's feisty, right? So bring her back with a bang. like, comment, share. It matters. Sorry, I had to do a commercial. Got to do a commercial every once in a while.
That's okay.
Got to pay bills. That's it. Yes. 100%.
So I have a question for you.
Question for me? What do you mean?
Yeah. Who is your favorite historical figure or someone that you just find fascinating?
Historical figure that I find fascinating. There are many of them.
Okay.
But I would grab some. One of my favorite, I think, is still Gandhi.
Okay.
And I say that because Gandhi was someone who was happy and proud to be a British citizen when he was young. Went to school in England, became a lawyer. He thought, I'm going to be one of them. Like he was like, when he was in South Africa, he was like, you can't treat me like these African people. They're not citizens of the empire. I am. And the South Africans were like, no, you're not one of us. Sorry. You get back of the bus. And from that experience, he didn't become violent or angry or that kind of thing. He still wanted to make things work without having to fight. And he realized that violence is a short-term answer, but is a long-term problem. And he was prepared to give his life for it. He's prepared to die for it. And when the reporters asked him, they said, Gandhi, how in the world are you going to, how are you going to fight someone like Hitler? Because of course he was in India during the World War II. Mm-hmm. And without, you know, how can you, you can't, Hitler will just kill you. He says, well, we could do it, but we'd have lots of defeats. Don't you have lots of defeats when you're fighting Hitler now? And they were like, well, yeah, and we'd have them too. But in the long run, we win. And what I like about that concept, that idea that I still think to this day, is twofold. One is what he said. They said, Gandhi, they'll kill you. They'll put you in prison. They'll kill you. He said, yes, they can grab me, put me in prison, and they can beat me and kill me. He goes, then they will have my broken body, but they still won't have my compliance. And that part was like, wow, powerful to me. But the second piece is, he said to the British Empire at that time, the greatest empire the world had known, the greatest empire on the planet at that time. And he was like, you're going to leave. And you'll leave his friends. Because when 500 million Indians, and then there were 500 million Indians, not a billion like there are now. He was right. Like, when 500 million Indians just refuse to do what you say, you'll eventually walk away and you'll leave his friends. It was a permanent solution. And India and the UK are still close. They have a good relationship now. And I think about it always. When we fall to violence, there's always problems. We as Americans, we still have issues with our civil war from 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
Yeah.
So I'm always about, I don't want to use violence. I want to solve a problem that's long-term without violence. And when you take this to the end, the biggest piece is government's violence. So I don't want to use government because it's violence. That's my point. I want people to do what I want them to do because they see my example or they see my logic or they think it makes sense or whatever, not because do it or I'll shoot you or imprison you. So right. I would have to say Gandhi, but Barry's already mad at you. Barry says, how the hell do you just pick one figure when they're all pretty much intertwined in the threads of history? And he literally put four question marks at the end of it. So I guess you're going to have to give me one. Give me one now. I gave you one. Give me one.
Well, gosh. Probably the person that I did my very first episode of Rogue History on. I got hooked on researching him. His name is Dr. Joseph Warren. He died at the Battle of Breed's Hill or Bunker Hill, whichever one you want to call it.
That's Massachusetts, right?
Yes. And he actually, I've said this several times in the episode, because I was just so shocked when I read this. I was just like, there's no way. But the more I read about him, the more I was like, you know what? I could kind of see that, because I also in turn learned about the person that people said that he would have basically shoved off to the side of history. There are historians now that believe if he had survived the Revolutionary War, George Washington never would have been the first president of the United States, and that he would have been a footnote as the general of the Revolutionary War.
Well, that was one of the first battles, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Was that in 75? That was in 1775, right?
70, Yes.
I think it was one of the first ones, or 76. It was one of the first battles, if I remember.
It was
the first one George Washington fought. Lexington was 75.
Yes.
So Bunker Hill was 75.
It was right after that.
There we go.
And the British were just like, this will be easy. Whatever. We outnumber them. They are not trained. Like, we have more ammunition. This is going to be a walk in the park.
But they dug in. The Americans dug in.
Mm-hmm, they did.
I remember.
Unfortunately, and I can't really go into detail on this on Facebook because this kind of stuff is like no territory. But the British hated him so much because of how he was able to command troops and inspire people that they did some very unspeakable things to him after he was deceased. And it took a long time. It took years for his body to be properly interred.
Wow.
It was just thrown in a mass grave, and just, they wanted to forget that he existed. They hated him that much.
Wow. John White says, yes, June of 1775. So there we go. And Christine says, have you seen the miniseries Sons of Liberty?
That miniseries. It is, however, full of historical fiction.
She was literally asking, her next question literally was, if so, how does it compare to actual history? That was literally her question.
So the character in Sons of Liberty, that is Dr. Joseph Warren, is depicted as having this affair with Thomas Gage's wife. I think her name is Margaret. That never happened. There is no evidence that they even ever met each other during their lifetimes. And there's a lot of other things that are just totally dramatizations, as Hollywood does. I still love that series from a standpoint of entertainment value.
Sure.
The end scene where George Washington reads the Declaration of Independence to the troops on the hill outside of
New York.
If you haven't seen it, just go look on YouTube for that scene from Sons of Liberty and watch it, because I get goosebumps and chills every time. Whoever the actor is, I can't recall his name, that played that part for George Washington, nailed it.
Wow. Well, there we go. I hope that answers your question. There we go. So let's see. I have one more who says, the Shamrocker says, my historical figure is Sojourner Truth. Oh, I didn't see that one coming.
Okay.
I didn't see that one coming. Sojourner Truth, she is, oh geez, 1840s, am I about right in that, am I about in that area?
Yeah, I think
Shamrocker,
so.
1840s maybe, give or take. She like sued somebody or something, right? Got her son out of slavery or something like that. I don't remember the whole story, something like that. Sued, got her son out of slavery or something like that, if I remember that. Great story.
Yeah, that was the first case that a black woman won against a white man.
There we go. That's what it was. There we go. There we go. Yeah. And that's prior to the Civil War. So what, 1840s, give or take, I'm thinking 1850s. It's my guess.
She was born in like 1790.
Oh, she was born in the 17. Oh my God. Is that right?
She was like very, very end of the 1700s is when she was born.
There we go. So maybe I'm off on that one. See, my synesthesia didn't work.
But she had a really, really long lifespan, I feel like. I want to say that she died when she was almost 100.
Wow, it's amazing. Wow.
So you
Adam
could be
says
right.
His historical figure would either have to be Thomas Hobbes or Adam Smith or Paolo Freire.
I don't recognize that last name.
I don't know him either. Adam, you stumped us both on Paolo. You stumped us on that one. You better send us a link or something, man. You messed us up. We got the first two, that we didn't get the last one. Absolutely, we didn't get it. Sorry about that. But you're talking about the idea of historical figures.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you think was a critical historical event. Critical historical event that you think, if that, and it doesn't have to be clear, I want to make sure it doesn't have to be the only thing, but if that one thing had changed, so many other things would have changed. Give me like one or two of them. You pick one or two. You thought this was going to be easy, didn't you? You said, I'm going to have a walk in the park with Larry Sharpe tonight. That's what you thought.
The presidency of James Buchanan. If the presidency of James Buchanan had been had gone differently.
So tell me an event. No, it's an event. Like,
it is an event.
That's 4 years. That's not an event. I'm talking like, I don't know, a thing that happened that you could, you know, sure, not 4 years. Like, is there one thing during the Buchanan presidency that if they, like, he had passed an amendment or something like that?
If he had not, stacked the Supreme Court the way he did.
Okay.
He made a backdoor deal to give a Supreme Court seat to a white Southerner who was very sympathetic to the Confederacy and the Confederate, you know, movement. At that time, it was just a movement. It wasn't really a thing. Then I don't think the Confederacy would have congealed in the way that it did, or it wouldn't have that soon. Like, there would have been more time to kind of head that off into another direction to where we potentially might not have had the Civil War. But the two that come to mind, if we're talking specific events, the Cuban Missile Crisis and 9/11.
Wow.
Those are the two big ones for me.
Okay. So if the Cuban Missile Crisis didn't happen, wouldn't there have been one right after, or what would have changed?
Saying if the Cuban Missile Crisis had turned out differently, weapons had been used.
So you're saying we actually could have gone to World War III?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, okay. It would have been very short.
Yes.
It would have been extremely short, so in the nuclear winter.
World Battle III.
Right.
It's just one. Okay. I buy that. Okay. What about 9/11? What do you mean? So like if we had stopped 9/11 before it happened like that?
Yeah. If 9/11 had not happened, so Cuban Missile Crisis, if it had happened, totally different story of history. 9/11, if it hadn't happened, totally different. You know, like we would be in a completely different place than we are today, especially with our civil liberties. We wouldn't have Department of Homeland Security. We would not have the Patriot Act. We would not have FISA. We would not have all of these things. We might have them to a lesser degree, but they definitely wouldn't exist in the form that they do now, which are extreme, which that attitude that we had right after 9/11, and you're from New York, and I'm sure I know that you remember this, and
100%.
I was middle school getting ready to transition into high school. I remember that feeling of like, we have to do everything we can to protect ourselves. And I, you know, as a kid, basically fell into that trap of thinking like, yeah, absolutely. The FBI.
I was ready to join the Marine Corps again. I'm with you.
Right.
I was in my 30s at that point, but I was still ready to join the Marine Corps. Yes.
It made sense. And it was because we were so scared. And the government took advantage of that.
Goes back to fear, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I'm going to go with, I have a couple, like you gave me a couple, but one I'll go with is Lincoln's assassination. I'll stay in the same world you stayed in. If Lincoln doesn't get assassinated and he's able instead to back Grant and Sherman with the 40 acres and the mule reparations after 1865, the vast majority of our civil rights issues that we have now with the black population, with descendants of slaves like myself, would be nowhere near as bad. Because Lincoln wanted one of two things. He wanted either reparations, or he wanted to send his slaves living out back to Liberia, back to Africa, to Liberia, which most of you don't know, Liberia is an American colony. It used to be.
They tried that. They sent a whole shipment of slaves to Haiti, and they were like, here you go, start over.
Yes,
and
but the plan
in like
that
two
Lincoln...
years, they were like, white flag, nope, we can't do this. Like, we're dying, we're all sick, we're starving, like, we don't know how to do this, come get us, please.
But what was supposed to happen in Liberia is many of the educated black Americans from the North who weren't slaves and were educated were all supposed to go back to Liberia and then restart a home. That was going to be a black homeland. That was one option. Or you just do the right way. You allow the slave owners to lose their land who owned the slaves, and then the black people get that land. I think you change how everything would have happened. You would have much more integration. You probably wouldn't have had Jim Crow. I think all of those things would have changed tremendously how America looks at our black population to this day. I think that's one. And I'll try to go more towards where you were talking about too. I would say World War I, the Germans don't have Zimmerman as their foreign minister. Zimmerman was an incompetent foreign minister who was the one who tried to convince Mexico to attack the United States, who was so bad in his communication with the German citizenry in America, so that the U-boats and the Lusitania, if America doesn't get involved in World War One, the Germans win World War One, the Austrians win World War One, and we don't have a Hitler, and we don't have a World War II like that. We may have something else, but we don't have Hitler. Right. We don't have the Holocaust. We don't have fascism the way it was. We might have some form of monarchy still, like the Kaiser of Germany would have still existed, but he probably would have been limited, like through a Magna Carta or something. And there would have been a whole different way of Eastern Europe changing. We wouldn't have had a World War II and probably not even a Cold War.
Yeah. Or if Zimmer and others hadn't rose through the ranks of government, would we have had a successful Weimar Republic?
No, that's after World War One. I'm saying during World War One.
So if he and his ilk have not caused World War One,
right?
Do we then set the stage for a more successful Weimar Republic versus a monarchy?
I don't think you can have a Weimar Republic because of Woodrow Wilson, your buddy, your best friend, Woodrow Wilson. He was so incompetent in losing the peace that I think Germany was doomed because Woodrow Wilson was incompetent.
And I also think that Germany was doomed because it was Germany versus an extremely nationalistic France and Great Britain as well.
But they were angry. They had a reason. Like, I'm not saying they're right, but the British and the French had a reason to be pissed off. They had lost millions of their best and brightest in the trenches. And I get why they were mad. We didn't have that. We showed up the last 5 minutes of the war.
No, but I'm saying, I'm saying before that, they had nationalistic attitudes. And that was the reason why the peace treaty at the end of the war failed.
Right.
It was because they were like, no, we tried to be nice to them. We're all about ourselves.
Yep.
So those attitudes existed before the war. And Wilson was awful at knowing how to deal with them. He had no counteroffers for them in Paris. He had no counteroffers for them in Versailles. And they were just like, okay, you're useless, whatever.
Yes, he was terrible. And I mean, people don't realize, most who don't know, when they made the League of Nations, that was Woodrow Wilson's idea. You know this, obviously. We didn't even join it.
Exactly.
He was that incompetent. He couldn't get the Congress to sign a treaty.
Right, exactly. He had this, I mean, he saw himself as a progressive hero.
Mm, of course he did. And, as he was resegregating our country and joining the KKK, he was super progressive.
Yeah, 100%. Super progressive. He was super oh, I have this great humanitarian vision and everybody's just going to go along with it because obviously it's the best idea ever. And when everybody was like, what are you smoking? He was just like, oh, you don't like that idea? Crap, I don't have a plan B. And so everybody else was like, okay, we're going to do whatever we want to do because you clearly are useless.
I knew I would trigger you with the Woodrow Wilson thing. Oh, yeah. I knew I would. This will trigger.
Do you want the list? I made a whole TikTok series about him.
No, I know. I figured I'd trigger you on that one. if I look at modern, I would say Nixon never engages in the war on drugs.
Ooh.
If Nixon never engages the war on drugs, I'm bringing these two pieces up because right now everyone's always talking about race and race issues and all that stuff, right? And I'm trying to find the historical reasons as to why we feel so bad. So if Nixon doesn't engage in the war on drugs, Reagan probably doesn't double down on it because he'd have to start it himself.
Exactly.
Reagan probably wouldn't have started on his own.
He absolutely did. He already started it himself because there were issue polls done at the beginning of his term asking Americans, do you feel like drug use and addiction are a big deal? And 3% of the country or 9%, it was under 10% of the country were like, yeah, that's kind of important. And everybody else was just like, no, we have other things that we need to worry about.
Absolutely.
Think about
that. So if Nixon doesn't start the war on drugs, imagine what America was seeing in the 70s and 80s. And for those of you who are old enough, I am old enough to remember, right? We were seeing things like the TV show Good Times, the Jeffersons, right? We were starting to see, America was seeing, oh, Black people were family like just like we were. TV was showing us that Black people are just people. Oh, okay, that was happening. Then the 80s comes and, you know, we got, you know, showing up with Cosby before he was a rapist. And and then we got the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air coming after that, right? I mean, you got all the cool things, well, Family and that, Matters.
And I would think, I would say that that still presented an ideal, but the ideal did not reflect reality.
Yes.
Because after the drug war started, suddenly you had fatherless homes and things like that. And all these shows depicted nuclear families that functioned well, and dad went to work every day, and, you know, dad was a cop in Family Matters and that kind of thing.
And that's my point. If there's no war on drugs, though, then that does match, right? And so now if you're a white person who hasn't met many Black people, and you meet one, you go, oh, that's what I saw on TV. Oh, yeah. Okay.
But you contrast, but it's like those shows would come on, and then the evening news would come on, and then all the evening news was about was, oh, these animals that are running the streets, and these gangs, and this drug use, and this is terrible, and look at this body lying on the street, and this is all gang violence, and like those two things were diametrically opposed.
Yep, absolutely. So Brian got mad. He said, middle school on 9/11, I feel old now. Brian.
I'm sorry.
I was in my 30s. It's fine. I'm with you. Don't worry about it. I'm with you. Absolutely. You made everybody feel mad now. So yes. So I had a couple of people who are, Barry Anderson says, Archduke Ferdinand's driver not taking a wrong turn. For those of you who don't know, he was killed by, oh my God. I forgot the guy's name from the Black Hand. I've forgotten the gentleman's name.
Oh gosh, Giuseppe something.
Yes, I feel like. I've forgotten his name. He actually has he was assassinated August of 1914. August 1914. So yes, is when he gets assassinated. And the funny thing is, he was a reformer. Archduke Ferdinand was actually a reformer, and they shot the reformer instead of the old, you know, emperor who was ready to, you know, be destroyed. Anyway, Byron says 40 acres and a mule was rescinded by Johnson and the Dixiecrats. And that's my point. If Lincoln is around, that doesn't get rescinded. Things change completely. Yeah.
Johnson was only ever meant to placate the South to begin with.
Absolutely.
Lincoln really didn't care whether or not he had him on the ticket.
Yes.
Didn't really want him.
So Josh is being a nudge. He says, you think Hitler was a bitter old man when he died in South America? Why are you starting trash, Josh? Why are you starting trash, Josh? So I think he was. It was in Paraguay. Anyway, Paula says Woodrow Wilson needs to be canceled. Ooh, look at that.
Absolutely.
Look at
that. No arguments at all.
There we go. Paula, you just made a friend. Well done. So yes, I love that. So Byron says, how did Carter and Ford treat the war on drugs? Also, the Marijuana Tax Act was the catalyst of the drug war. But I'm not sure if you, Byron, that's a tough one. The Marijuana Tax Act was many years before the war on drugs. Wasn't the 30s? Is that right? I may be off my dates. I think the Marijuana Tax Act was the 30s. It was a long time ago. I don't remember when it was, but it was a long time ago.
Wasn't that kind of like an addition to prohibition?
It was right after. It was like prohibition. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. It was one of those value-based morality things that, well, you can't be a moral person or a good person if you're using this devil's lettuce.
Yes. Yeah. I'm old enough to remember Carter as a president. I don't really remember. I remember Ford being my president, but I'm not old to remember his actions. Carter was the guy who shook everyone to the core when he did an interview with Playboy magazine. Some of you might be able to remember this. And he said he was a very religious, observant Christian, and still is. I'm sorry, he's still alive. And then he actually said that he has sinned in his heart, and as every Christian has, we are all sinners. And people were like, what? How dare he say this horrible scandal? Oh, my God.
And, well, Carter was overruled by basically his voter base and different things. He did actually fill out a normal candidate survey, normal existed back then, and said that he favored decriminalization. And yes. during the campaign, they suppressed that. They didn't really want him to run on that. And then all of these grassroots, like parent groups mm-hmm. and things like that, just a ton of activist groups basically came out and were like, we can't have this. And yep. so he ended up getting pressured into continuing the drug war.
So Paula says, there is Princip. Gavrilo Princip shot the Archduke. Thank you so much, Paula. Yeah, Princip was, I remember his last name. Yeah, Paula. So thank you. And Byron says, yes, 1936 is when the Marin Tax Act hit after Prohibition.
Right after Prohibition.
So my issue with that is I'm unsure if I would say that's the drug war. I mean, I can see your point. But I think at that point, the drug war was still much more like, let's just get those mean Mexican people out of the Southwest and their peyote. It was much more of a border war, I feel at least, than actually a war on drugs in the 30s and 40s. I think in the 70s is when the real war on drugs really hit, when you had a much more of an aggressive police force, the FBI really doing that. I think that was the bigger deal, in my view. I don't know. Elaine, am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. But as far as Ford and Carter are concerned, which I think was the original question.
Yeah.
Ford was basically copying Nixon. So that wasn't going to change. And then Jimmy Carter tried to be this reformer mm-hmm. and got shut down really hard. And there were so many other things wrong with his presidency that he wasn't going to get a second term. I still really like Jimmy Carter as a person.
Me too. I hate saying it, but I do. Like, I wish he was my grandpa.
Yeah, like, he's
a great guy. I wish he was my grandpa. I don't want to be president ever, but I wish he was my grandpa.
That kind of illustrates for you what happens to good people that do become president.
Yes. Yes. Oh, wow. That's very good. I'm so going to steal that. And I promise you, I will give you no credit whatsoever. I'm so going to take it and act like it was mine. Like, I was so brilliant. I thought of this. So yes. But yeah, I agree. And Jesus, the same thing. He goes, I like Jimmy Carter too. I think a lot of people like him as a person, but man, he was not a good president.
No, but for many reasons.
Yes.
And it's so funny that this comes up because earlier today I was looking for it. Someone said that Biden felt to them more like a Carter than an FDR in response to a blue check comparing Biden and FDR.
Okay.
And my response was, but that would require Biden to actually be a good person.
That's true. That's true. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
They'd have to probably tolerate all of this nonsense a whole lot better if I was like, well, he's a good guy, like, oh, sweet old grandpa, you know, but I don't think that's the case.
There we go.
He's been this way for too long.
Paul is teasing us. He says, I was four on 9/11.
Yeah.
Paul, I no longer like you. I used to. I no longer do. Barry says, Charlie Martel not standardizing the Franks into a standard army to stop the Moors from invading Frankish Gaul from the Iberian Peninsula. That's where you get Charlemagne from, right? That's Charlemagne, right?
That's 800 BC.
No, AD.
AD, yes. Sorry.
That's AD. Yep, that's AD.
BC.
Absolutely, yeah. Or now the cool way is saying CE.
Oh, why did we change it?
You didn't know that?
No.
Oh, yes. For those who don't know, all the cool scholars, BC is no longer BC. It is BCE. And AD is no longer AD, it is CE. And CE stands for the Common Era. And BCE stands for before the Common Era. I'm not making this up. It's absolutely true.
I believe you.
It is now.
I just don't understand why we had to change it. Why Pluto can no longer be a planet.
AD says in Latin, in the year of our Lord.
Oh, okay.
And so non-Christians were upset and non-Christian world were like, well, we don't, you know, the Chinese don't follow that. So they're like, this is not fair. But they said, it is a we all agree that this is the year, so it's a common era. So they changed it to the common era versus AD, which in Latin is...
I think I had heard that.
Anno Dominium.
To something like BC that. And AD, because it was just ingrained in me from when I learned it.
No, I learned it because my daughters were in school.
Gotcha.
And they taught that. They taught CE.
My son is 8, so we're not there yet.
You will be. Yes, you will be. Yes.
It'll be a lot sooner than I would like, yes. I'm sure.
So now it's CE and BCE. Okay. That's what it is. Yes, Gene says BCE and AD. Adam says it's after death. It's not after death. It's Anno Dominium. I don't know what the Latin word is. Anno is year and Dominium is of our Lord, like the Lord's year. So it actually means in the year of our Lord. That's why if you hear him say it, they will say, in the year of our Lord, 1975, because that's AD in Latin. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll say. So, yes. So that's what people thought it was after death, but it's not. It's Latin stuff because.
Latin stuff.
That's the reason
why. Because we still base things on a dead language that no one speaks. It's fine.
Correct. Critical. I'm glad we do that. So smart. Anyway. Yes. AG says it is Anno Domini. Thank you, AJ. AJ hooked me up. My people always hook me up. They do. They just say they pay. They're, thank you, guys. I don't have to do, like, I see YouTubers all the time, like, type in stuff and Googling. I don't have to do any of that. My people are like, I got you, Larry. I got you. And they do. Thank you.
The loyalty. Guys,
you're the best. Yes, you're the best. I love it. So Barry's got one more.
Okay.
He says, would Japan have been an adversary in World War II? If America never went there in the late 1800s and forced trade with them and brought them back to the global stage. Mm. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that was Admiral Perry, who was the American admiral. And I think we're talking 1853 or 58, I think, if that's correct. One of those two, Barry. 1850s. I think 1853 or 58, he sails into Tokyo Bay. And has gunboat diplomacy and says, hey, Japan, you want to trade with us? They go, no, please leave. Hey, Japan, I said, do you want to trade with us? Oh, no, of course. Just kidding. Of course, we want to trade with you. You silly Americans. I think it's a valid point, Barry. Is there a Meiji restoration? Do the Japanese grow as fast as they grew if America doesn't come in and force them into the global stage? My guess, Barry, would be no. But then if the Japanese aren't our adversaries, when do we get into the World War II? Right? That changes everything, right? The Germany's war in Europe had nothing to do with Japanese war in Asia. They were completely separate in every way, shape, and form. So if there's no Pearl Harbor, how do we get involved in World War II? And I'll ask a trick question for many of you. When did the United States declare war on Germany?
We didn't.
Thank you. That's a trick question. We never did. Germany declared war on us.
Yes.
December 10th, Hitler declares war on America. If Hitler doesn't declare war on America, we didn't go to war against Germany. If you remember what FDR says, another incompetent president, he says, I want the day that will live in infamy, I ask Congress to declare war against the Empire of Japan. Even though what he meant to say is, empire, but what he didn't understand is Japan was a democracy. It was another broken democracy. It was a broken Weimar Republic. So there's a saying that people always say, which is democracies rarely warn each other. That's not true. They warn each other all the time. These aren't that many democracies.
Yeah, they converted to more of a democratic system in the 20s.
Absolutely. So yes.
It was still 100%. New for them. Like it by no means was like their ancient tradition. Their ancient tradition was far more feudal than that. But it had changed over by the 20s. And that is a really interesting question. And I think you're right. I don't think it would have played out the same way.
Paula says Admiral Perry sailed into Tokyo in March of 1854. I was off by a year. Sorry about that, guys. Even I can't remember it all. I apologize. Yes, 1854, 1853. I'm off. But yes, it was 1850s. And Benjamin says, I disagree. Japan had many offensive operations into Asia prior to the aforementioned American contact. I think that's true, but none of them were modern, Benjamin. They were not modern. The Japanese invaded Korea many times.
Well, they didn't have, they still had a trading post though. They had this Dutch trading post.
Yep.
But they put extremely strict limits on it. They were just like, you get this one little island. You cannot leave. There is a curfew. If you disobey us, we will kick you out. Like, we are done. This is all you get. And it was in Nagasaki. And it was just this little tiny island. And they literally like put a gate on it. And they were just like, you have to stay in there.
Yes, absolutely.
100%. And then America came along and did what America does. And we were just like, oh, rules? No, following our rules now.
We have guns.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly.
Yes. No, but I think my point that Benjamin is saying is it's true. The Japanese had invaded Korea as early as, I think as early as around 1500s, 1600s in that area. They had invaded, by the way, most of them, no, the Japanese are not native to their island. The Japanese are actually Koreans who came to Japan many, many thousands of years ago. The actual people are a Native American people or a Native American, an indigenous population called the Ainu. The Ainu are basically the Native Americans of Japan, the Native Japanese. And there are still many of them in the most northern island of Hokkaido in Japan. So I think what I'm talking about Benjamin is they weren't a modern nation, if that makes any sense. They became a modern nation. I think that's what he's trying to say. They became a modern nation because we sailed into Tokyo Bay. If we hadn't sailed into Tokyo Bay, they would have never been a modern nation. Oh, not never, but they wouldn't have been then. And if they wouldn't have been a modern nation then, there's no need to grab rubber and oil and all those things, which means there's no need to invade French Indochina. There's no need to invade the Philippines. There's no need to make the invasions that made us actually invade. So they wouldn't have had to invade the Dutch colonies because they wouldn't have been modernizing. I think if I read the question right, I think that's what Barry was trying to say, that they wouldn't have gone into the global stage as fast, and they wouldn't have done any of these things. Therefore, they wouldn't have modernized as fast. Therefore, they wouldn't have made all the invasions that they made to get those resources. Therefore, there wouldn't be a Pearl Harbor. That's where I think his head is going, if I got that right. Please tell me if I was right, Barry.
And if Japan didn't do all of those things because we didn't force them to the world stage, our relationship with China would be completely different.
Oh, yes. Also very true. Yes. Also very true. Paul's got my back. Japan invaded Korea 1592. I knew it was about 1600. Yeah. 1592. Yep. So, yeah. That then. So I do think that's what Barry was saying. It wasn't that the Japanese didn't do bad things. But the point is, they wouldn't have done them if we hadn't pushed them into it, because the other nations, to your point, Elaine, weren't prepared to be as aggressive as we were. They were happy to stay in their little islands.
Mm-hmm. They were going to follow the rules.
They were following the rules.
Right.
We were like, rules, rules. We're Americans. We know what we want.
We're Americans. We break all of the rules. All of the time.
We got guns. That's all they cared about. Basically. We're good. I love that piece. So let me ask you.
The proliferation of guns was one of the reasons why the samurai died out.
Yes.
Because suddenly you had these laws being passed and made and enforced where you couldn't carry samurai swords in public. You couldn't dress in the traditional dress anymore in public. Like, it was very much a forced updating of the 100%. Culture.
They made the Japanese had about 100 years of civil war before the age of the samurai. Well, before the high age of the samurai, and they were tired of war, and they were like, so how are we going to make this happen? So they made ritualized war. Everything became ritualized. The samurai became ritualized. Everything became ritualized. Everything changed. Mm-hmm. Well, Elaine, I'm going to have to let you go here. I have another podcast I'm on in a half an hour, and I got to eat something. So literally, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm going to be on the trench. Hold on, let me get it right. I gotta make sure I get the actual name right, or he's gonna be mad at me. It's the Trench something. Let me get it right. I'm gonna be on the Trench Work Chronicles. Yes, I'm gonna be in the Trench Work Chronicles in about a half an hour. Anything we want to talk about before we wrap this up? Where can they see you? What can they do? For people listening on your side, head over to the Sharp Way. Check all my Sharp Way cool things out. Click me on YouTube, the Instagram, all the Insta webs. I'm on everything. The Sharp Way. How about you? How can people find you?
I am Libertarian Redhead on Facebook. I am Libertarian Red One on Twitter. And I also have a TikTok account, which is the exact same as my Twitter, Libertarian Red One. I'm not as active on TikTok, but I do rant about presidents that I hate, like Woodrow Wilson and FDR. And I also talk about things like ballot access and policy, criminal justice policy, and things like that. So yeah, I'm probably the most active on Twitter and Facebook. So come find me there, check me out. I will start again doing more regular podcasts from my page and hopefully, you know, get back to talking about history and things like that.
I love that. Guys, if you like the show, what I did today, if you think this is a good show, then do me a favor. Head over to patreon.com/sharpway, support the show. 10 bucks, 25 bucks, 100 bucks, whatever it is, whatever you need. You got tons of Biden bucks? Throw me a bunch of those Biden bucks if you got them. So I can keep moving this show forward and doing what I'm doing and trying to give you guys some interesting, cool content to hang out with. And also hope you learn something too and bring some cool people aboard. But no matter what, always like, comment, share. We have to grow. Guys, everyone who was watching, thank you so much.